That lass on Radio 4 who's sort of Charlotte Green, she's got nothing on me.
Do you look into their eyes, Ian, or is that too personal a question? You don't want to go into this.
What would you be shouting at the television screen, Ian Lennox?
I can't proofread that.
But there is a slight suggestion that next season might be better. So.
Let's hope so.
No one seems to get a penalty for pulling shirts nowadays, or hardly ever.
Or Seven Simple Seasons.
See what we did there?
Yes, like so. It.
Fly Me to the Moon, the audio podcast companion with Rob Nichols.
There you have it. We're back again with, of course, the delightful tones in the background there of our traditional jingle of Ian Lennox. And guess what, Rob Nichols? Ian Lennox is with us now. Could he have written another book? Yes, he has. Wow. It's amazing. Ian, we'll get this shameless plug out of the way because it's the podcast companion for Fly Me to the Moon, issue 608, of course, heading up against Barnsley, in which we got interviews with Neil Warnock. We've also got Harry Pearson's text, The Father Corner, being developed and so on. A mention of South Shields in that one, no less. A fine interview. But first and foremost, Ian Lennox, as well as being a keen supporter of that side, that's also in a Middlesbrough-like lockdown, because that's what the government in Westminster like to do. You're in the north, go into lockdown. Don't go out at all. Just stay away from the whole thing. So let's plug your book, which if you're stuck at home or you're at home, you should actually send on contact Amazon straight away and buy a copy of Marley's...
Weapon.
Exactly. Marley's Weapon. 99 pence. That's not going to last long. People should go out now and buy it straight away. Ian, briefly, just pray see Marley's Weapon. Just tell us a little bit about it before we move into the programme.
Right, it's set in the 60s in a newspaper office, and the main character is a chap called Noel Marley. In the days where people were very ambitious in journalism, there were a lot of young journalists wanting to go off to the Nationals. He was the opposite, he didn't care, and wasn't well thought of in the office. And one day he was gratuitously insulted by one of the alpha males of the office in front of the whole of his staff. And he decided he was going to do something about it. And this chap who insulted him, a chap called John Marley, John Drury, wrote reviews and other features in a rather sort of contentious style. And so what Marley decided to do was to write letters to the newspaper criticising his work, criticising the reviews. And so a battle commenced. He wrote under a pseudonym of Cyclops. And it became apparent that Marley's writing was better than that of Drury's. But the question was, he was winning the war, he's winning the battle, but was he going to be able to win the war and create a decent career for himself with an interesting life?
And we'll hold it there, Ian. We'll hold it there, okay? We don't want to give too much away. I think that's whetted the It's whetted the appetite. We don't want to go any further. Rob, when we last spoke, you were about to be one of the 1,000. You were in one of those 1,000 people who attended Middlesbrough's last home game, a magnificent 1-1 draw, if memory serves. Share with us, before, of course, what might, who knows, be a one-off for the season?
Don't say that. I mean, that is the terrible thing about it. It was one step forward, and I've said one step forward, a giant leap backwards, wasn't it? It was very safe and secure. We had a tweet from a 73-year-old guy that said since COVID has come in, at the start of the year, he's been afraid to go to the shops or anything like that. His relative took him to the match, and he felt the whole thing was a really good experience, and he felt very safe and secure. I thought that really summed up how we felt. Everybody was perfectly observing things, wearing their masks to go in, but also, and sitting in a socially distant way, there was several seats right around me that were empty. But the key thing was that we did actually create an atmosphere. I wasn't sure whether that would work, but it did work. And everybody in the one stand under that roof made quite a noise. And so it showed the possibilities, really, if you spread that out around the ground at the same sort of distancing, it would have worked. So... obviously, since then, today, we've gone into lockdown and joined the rest of the North East almost. Stockton and Redcar, the odd ones out, aren't they? So, it was very promising, and it was exciting to be part of it. I felt privileged, and so there was an awful lot of people missed out. It was very, very sad. But if we could have We were hoping against hope that this Saturday was going to be the first game with a third capacity. That was what we were aiming for all along. And it's not to be now. And as you say, it could be a long way off. And, you know, it's just not the same, is it? It's not the same without the fans. And Neil Warnock was saying today, it's from the player's point of view and from the manager's point of view, also, it's not the same at all. Not the same experience. And they're just trying to help us through it. I think that's what they're trying to do, is their mission to give us something to support. And also, of course, I mean, you'll know this, Ian, the Premier League have got a lot of other revenue streams coming into the castle. They've got revenue from lots of different areas, Sky, etc. But for the EFL, this is it's life and death as far as fans.
I want to say, I was reading a little bit about Middlesbrough, and apparently they're a well-run club.
Yeah.
What do you mean, apparently? There's no apparent about it. They are a well-run club.
But their outgoings are projected at 32 million, and their income is projected at 8 million.
Yep.
If that's the well-run club, what on earth is going to happen to the one who aren't as well-run? I mean, I can't see how a lot of these clubs are going to go under before Christmas, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I did see a rumor going around that 20 clubs could be in administration before Christmas. That's in the EFL, right. But I would have thought it might be far more than that.
And if you add the points deductions to that as well, you could have a number of sort of issues settled before we even need to turn the corner, really. But let's move on to brighter things. We're still awaiting Borough's first league win at the Riverside this year.
That's right.
As I say, 1-1 against Bournemouth, not sufficient. We've sort of limped through from that point of view. And Barnsley, of course, have been there before, but hopefully they'll realise it's not the Carabao Cup, second round north, and that they need to acknowledge that Akpom is going to do the business, because we have a new player. We have a new striker.
We do. And it was interesting. I got to speak to him last week via Zoom. And I said, who were the sort of players that you looked up to and maybe like who were sort of models for you as you were developing? And he said Thierry Henry, fair enough, and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. But I don't think he was aware that Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank had played so many games at Middlesbrough. I don't think he knew that link at all. So if he can do something along those lines, but to score, to actually score on your debut is brilliant, isn't it?
As you allude to, it's something, Rob, that also has been shared by Marco Branca, Alan Armstrong, and indeed a certain Fabrizio Ravanelli. And what happened when they scored on their debut in that season?
Let's forget about Ravanelli, but for the other two, we got promoted.
Exactly. And as you say, welcome to Chuba Akpom. Look, holding it up there. Personally, from that point of view, welcome to Chuba Akpom. Made an immediate impact for Borough. So, this is a guy who, in essence, you might well say, why would he actually join Middlesbrough? But I think it's an exciting signing, isn't it, really, in terms of obviously supporting the front line of Asamoah Longo and Fletcher?
Absolutely, because he's actually been playing in the Champions League. So he's actually gone from the Champions League to the Championship, which is pretty good going. He's been playing a couple of seasons in Greece, where he's really well thought of. The team that he played for, POAK, actually, they did an Arsenal. He was an Arsenal player, wasn't he? And they did an Arsenal that went through the whole season as invincibles. So let's hope he can bring some of that back to Middlesbrough and get us winning at home.
And of course, there has been the strengths of people like Ray Parler and Paul Merson, who, of course, were also ex-Gooners. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a bit of a track record on that basis. Ian, does this transcend to Newcastle, or is it a case of, no, you're just happy to actually have beaten Newport in the Carabao Cup?
Well, the result was better than performance, I think. I maintain for 2 years now that nothing's going to change in Newcastle until Ashley goes, and I've just seen him more than that, really. I saw Newcastle play three games to the end of last season, two against Man City, one against Liverpool, and they shouldn't have been on the same pitch. We're so far behind the better teams now, and it's going to take, even if the salaries had taken over with all the money, it was going to take 4 or 5 years to get back to the level that they're at. I would have thought.
As ever, Rob, our optimistic Tyneside view there coming across in every way. Actually, Ian, when was the last live football match you actually went to?
2 years ago, I think. I can't remember which one specifically it was. I've got friends, fortunately, who have got nice seats and they used to invite me along. I don't know why, because I sit there grumbling all the time.
Again, very much in keeping with the whole system. Mine, as I think I've alluded to, was actually this year. I think it was March this year, and it was Lincoln City against MK Dons. What a wonderful sort of last live game to potentially actually sort of take to on sort of thing there. Lincoln City versus MK Dons. Yeah. Of course, returning to that, Tosh Warwick writing, returning to football then kicked back out again. He talks about the Manchester Metropolitan University Research Associate, and well, he is a Manchester Metropolitan. And again, that line of how it's an interesting article, Rob. Share with us, what was Tosh talking about here in terms of obviously the stresses and strains of where the thing's going?
Well, he's been researching a bit, delving back into the 19th century when there were other sort of pandemics issues. And there was the famous case where Middlesbrough, because of an outbreak of smallpox, we couldn't play the FA Amateur Cup semi-final, and we had to play on a neutral ground behind closed doors, so to speak. So he's been looking at that a bit, and he's actually some of his research has been sent to the government for, you know, looking at the way sport responded to those challenges in the 19th century. But yeah, he was also fortunate to go to the match a couple of weeks ago. And he interviewed me a bit about what I thought about it, it was a really good experience, but so sad about you know that the door has been slammed, and you can't gloss it over, can you? Really, we've been so looking forward to the Bournemouth game for so long, really, that we thought that we had real prospect of that, but. Mm. It's back to the streams again in living rooms everywhere.
Yeah, very much. Isolated. And I mean, Ian, is the experience the same? Is it different? Is it a case of, well, at least with a stream, you can actually check the VAR decisions if you're in the Premier League or not, the case may be.
I put the crowd noise on and I tend not to notice the empty stadium or stadia. There's nothing like being at the match, is there? The atmosphere is totally different, and you're part of it. I don't like when you watch football on television. You can't really see what's going on. You can only see about a third of the pitch at the time, so you can't see what's going on off the ball properly. So, and you get a sort of a limited view of who's doing what.
That's a really good point, that Ian. I used to know an MP called Alan Keane, who was also Middlesbrough's scout in the South and the Midlands for 20 years. He was like, mm-hmm. He used to do like a dossier on other teams, and we used to discuss this quite often, that the difference between somebody who'd watch the game and maybe watch the whole of the game on a TV, and they do not see the off the ball running and the off the ball work. And they often have a completely different man of the match. There'll be a really hard-working midfielder or a forward that's making lots of runs off the ball. And they've got no idea when they're watching it on the TV
You get other players criticised for passing the ball sideways when there's nothing up front. There's no one in the pass. No. You just don't know.
Is that the reason the late great Ray Wilkins was actually faced with always being called the crab? Never mind, that's another line. Rob, you had a chance to actually have almost a one-to-one with Neil Warnock via Zoom, of course. How did you find him overall? Because I mean, I get a sense from the interview that you featured in the magazine that actually he comes across certainly as somebody who, you know, maybe not surprisingly, 1,500 games as manager, still not sure about the sobriquet Marmite, but generally a decent bloke.
Absolutely. He really genuinely enjoys the conferences, the press conferences, and he's got a tremendous attitude to life, hasn't he? He says about, you know, being upbeat all the time, but that press conference went on for over an hour today, and he just loved talking to everybody, but he also really wanted to get his messages across about COVID, that he's just recovered from something, and it was only because of all the medical advice he had around him that he was able to ensure that it didn't get to his lungs, for instance, doing a lot of breathing exercises. But really wanted to put across to people that he didn't expect to get it, and to do whatever you can to stop it, and but also think about the vulnerable people, and think about that it might not be you, but you meeting together with somebody could pass it on to somebody in the vulnerable groups. I really enjoying it. We're all really enjoying listening to him, and he's desperate to get out and meet fans in whatever way. So he's hoping to do it now, as I said. He's hoping to do it in an online way, and if he can, because he just loves to chat to fans. He said,
"I'll tell you what, people. There are lots and lots of people like Neil, and they absolutely love football. They love football, and that's such a they've all got that in common." You know, they're what called football people, and they could spend the rest of life talking about football, as far as I can see, and nothing much else. They won't be bothered about it.
Yeah.
Well, there we are, and clearly, Rob, you know, Neil Warnock, a bit like Roy Hodgson, and indeed Ian Lennox, both septuagenarians, or all septuagenarians, so obviously, sort of coping, you know, showing that there's hope for us all, basically.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's talk Harry Pearson. We mentioned the Father Corner and a lovely line in terms of the writer Harry Pearson, where he says, if you look at South Shields, for instance, why would you want to look at South Shields? Anyway, he remembers South Shields in 1996. There were 115 people there, and now they were getting 2,500 quite regularly. Well, obviously pre-COVID scenarios, but talk to us about the Father Corner and this interview with Harry Pearson.
Yeah, the Father Corner is kind of like, it's the... We were discussing whether it was almost like the tricky second album for a band. In that, Harry Pearson's written lots of books in between The Far Corner, which was the one that made his name, and The Father Corner. But it's the first time he's gone back to the same subject of going around the Northeast, looking at clubs, looking at fans, talking about the tradition, looking at the characters, etc. And I know Harry very well, and we became friends through The Far Corner, really, I suppose, as many people. And I know that I've asked him many times, and everywhere I go where I see him, people always ask him, are you not going to write another Far Corner? And he's always, I can't do that.
It's a bit like Ian Lennox being asked, are you not going to write another Brothers?
Yeah, absolutely, totally, isn't it? And He said that he was so worried about doing this that he even went off to Scotland for a week and switched his phone off. He was really worried that people would be let down by what he was doing. But I thought when he wrote it in 1994, he had no idea that the football world that he was charting, that had been the same since his grandfather's time, was coming to an end. Middlesbrough moved from Ayrton Park, and then Newcastle, Chorley changed their grounds. Sunderland moved to a new stadium. It became all-seater. He said within 5 years he went into the school. He's got this book. He's reading from this book, and the kids are saying, "What do you mean stand up? What do you mean you were queuing at a turnstile? You were paying your money to go in the ground? Don't do that." And everything had changed at the top level, but also changed for Northern League. It trickled down. But he's making that point about South Shields, that it's not all one way, that actually a lot of the local teams have done really, really well of late, like South Shields. And possibly they've swallowed up a lot of fans who've become disillusioned with Newcastle, Sunderland and Middlesbrough, disillusioned with that form of football. And that's so a big change. But I did put to him that sadly it could be that once again you've written a book that's just we're on the brink of another change because of COVID. And let's hope that he's not written a book, a record in time, where everything's going to change again, and a lot of these clubs are going to be wiped out. Let's hope not.
It's the curse of Harry Pearson. You know, he's going to school a few years' time saying South Shields or Sunderland. They had a football club, did they? What? A football club in Newcastle. Thankfully, Middlesbrough, of course, will obviously still be running, which is very important. Shall we, with Ian obviously as our studio audience or Zoom audience, shall we, Rob, attempt to do justice to Jimmy Flynn's latest epic, this time dedicated to the fabulous Harold Shepherdson, who I only met very briefly once, but of course, he was Alf Ramsey's right-hand person. Are we ready to actually attempt this?
Okay.
Find it. I think you'll find it on page 9, unless I'm way off base here. And do feel free, if you've actually got a copy of the paper edition, and why shouldn't you, of the Fly Me to the Moon fanzine, and you're one of the famous subscribers, then obviously you can feel free to read along. So let's actually hopefully get this started. Harold Shepherdson was Borough and England's man of many seasons. With it came... the lighting has gone completely. Yeah, I never thought I'd actually say that. But the lighting has actually gone completely on this, so I might have to. We might have to sort of just rearrange this. Sorry to let you down on that one, Ian. But I'm used to reading these when there's full daylight. And let's see if I can actually sort of use this. I should have actually brought a torch or just something. Actually, put a light on. Let's see if this will actually improve it anymore. Yes, I think we're okay now. Let's go for take 26, Rob, and we'll actually get this sorted out. Come heck or high water.
I've got a Geordie lamp.
That's what you're saying. High
tech, isn't it? Quite clearly. Okay.
I didn't realise this Zoom lot was high tech.
Yeah.
Harold Shepherdson was Borough and England's man of many seasons, with a career unrivalled in longevity for several reasons.
A former Army Staff Sergeant and PTI, there was much more to Harold than met the eye.
A centre-half whose career was halted by the Second World War before injury forced him through the early retirement door.
He seamlessly slotted into a coaching role, an assistant to Borough's legendary trainer, Charlie Cole.
Giving everything to the task, heart and soul, steeped in football psychology.
Versed in human physiology, an inspired move to prove it proved to be.
Blessed with diplomacy and easy charm, fractious situations he could calmly disarm.
A deep thinker with an analytical mind, seeing things to which others were blind.
A football man in the truest sense, his knowledge of the game immense.
At Borough, as a stream of managers came and went, he remained steadfast and a steadying hand lent.
Declining many offers from suitors to move along, his loyalty to Borough unwavering, unbreakably strong.
There in times of crisis to steady the ship, providing advice, stability and leadership.
In good times and bad, for nigh on half a century, a reassuring, constant presence he continues to be.
On the international stage, he made his name, operating at the highest levels of the game.
The longest-serving trainer in England history, honoured for his duties with an MBE.
Commencing his national role alongside Walter Winterbottom in 57, before assisting Alf Ramsey on a journey to football heaven.
The England Supremo's trusted right-hand man, vital to the manager's every World Cup plan.
There on the Wembley sideline that glorious day when Jules Rimet Trophy came England's way.
A man content to play a supporting role, the success and welfare of his charges, his twin goal.
Veteran of 4 World Cup tournaments and 169 international games, mentor to many of England's football's greatest names.
An ambassador for Middlesbrough FC and Teesside, carrying with pride the name of both worldwide.
Harold Shepherdson was Borough's man of many seasons, with a career unrivalled in longevity for several reasons.
That was the first time we actually did this with floodlights, really, Rob. Our first sort of evening edition of Fly Me to the Moon. And I don't know, Ian, what did you think? Did that send a sort of shiver of recognition as you remembered Harold Shepherdson?
I do remember, actually. I remember I was a young reporter in the 60s when England won the World Cup. And he was the trainer then, wasn't he? And he was very highly thought of. And I remember people talking about him. I never met him. I never knew him at all. His work was he working with Middlesbrough at the same time?
The trainer, assistant manager, and he was for years and years.
How did that? He started under Winterbottom, did he?
He did?
Yeah. Winterbottom was one of the great theorists. He was a real deep thinker about football. He had lots of theories at a time when English football was described as stupid football.
That's only down to Hungary and Ferenc Puskás, that's all. It was only 6-3. I mean, you know, Leicester City actually had a 5-3 win over the weekend. We don't talk about it.
I saw that game on television.
Yeah, fine. Yeah. Let's move on. It's Spider Moon Borough podcast, okay? We don't go any further. Yeah. Let's talk Barnsley, because obviously they're back at Borough tomorrow. Yeah. You'll be watching it on screen. I mean, it sounds a little bit crass at this stage in the season, but Borough could do with 3 points as opposed to another single point. I mean, 2 points is not great.
No. They've had a bit of an unsettled week, haven't they, Barnsley? Because the manager seems to be wanted by in New York. So it's a bizarre sort of situation. And yeah, they've had a look at us a couple of weeks ago, obviously, as you mentioned at the start, in the Carabao Cup, in that victory they had at the Riverside. And yeah, we do need to start winning games. But if we did win a game, as Neil Warnock pointed out today, that it would make for a very good start of the season, wouldn't it? Because we've played two very hard fixtures in Watford and Bournemouth. And obviously only that one narrow defeat away at Watford. So a win would transform things. And then I don't know whether we'll make too many more signings. It doesn't sound like one or two, maybe, because as Ian just said, the money is just not there, and it would again something that Warnock said today.
You're not going to gazump Manchester United and actually put in a bid for Jordan Sancho?
No, exactly, and it would be, in some ways it would be criminal of any Championship club to spend too much money, and some of them are, and you fear, don't you, that short term, that could be the ultimate short termism, couldn't it, really, for some of them? If anyone gets into financial difficulty between now and Christmas, having spent lots of money in this transfer window, then you would have very little sympathy for them, wouldn't you?
It's madness, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, there's just not as much money in the game because of COVID. So, you know, £105 million for one player. This is what Man United are being asked for, apparently.
And can you imagine what that hundred? Well, we're talking about the EFL possibly losing £200 million through COVID. So, can you imagine how many clubs that money could save, really, and how many communities and it's that kind of thing that's it's leaving a bitter taste in a lot of people's mouths who follow clubs lower down. And by lower down, it's anyone that's not in the top four or five, isn't it, really? So it's a sort of real us and them mentality now, and if we're all having to ask about handouts from the government, but you really feel that these clubs should be handing some money down, trickling down the pyramid, but the problem is that
since the formation of the Premier League, the league split up. It's a two-tier league now, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's more than a two-tier league, actually, because I think what's going to happen within the next 10 years or so, there'll be a European league.
Yeah.
It's inevitable, you know, the big teams of there's two or three teams. There's two, and if you look at each European country, there's maybe three or four teams in each league that are completely outstanding. They're way above all the competitors, and they're going to go for the big bucks eventually. They're bound to.
But unfortunately, what they want, Ian, is the last time that this was mooted, which was only about a year. It was only last year, I think. They want to stay. They want one foot in their own domestic leagues and one foot in a European league. They want to milk both the money from both, and that's
I think that was under the auspices of the sort of like the Champions League, but I think if they had a 20
I think they
team,
want to extend. They want
European to, League would be the
yeah,
workshop.
But I think they want to extend the Champions League, but they also want to be in their own domestic leagues to be able to get the money from there as well. You see what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's a strange system at the moment, isn't it? They've got these teams are basically going to have two teams to play because they've got a number of fixtures. They've got the League Cup, the FA Cup. The league, and then the Champions League. You know, it's they're playing 60, 70 games a season, some of them. 60 games a season, I guess. They're playing 38 games in the Premier League, and then they got all these cup runs and things.
It's a different world.
And in that different world, which is still our world, but slightly different, Borough only are 7 points ahead, adrift of the top two. The 100%ers are currently in the league. Yeah. In the Championship, at least Bristol City and Reading are both on 9 points. Borough have 2 points in 18th position. It's not an unachievable task, and I'm sure that it could start with a victory against Bristol, against Barnsley.
Against Barnsley, yeah, come on.
That's the key thing. And then, of course, we've got another home game that follows shortly thereafter, which, again, is probably worthwhile just spending a few moments on to sort of close today with, in terms of after hopefully getting 3 points against Bristol City, it's home to Reading.
After Barnsley.
After Barnsley, yeah.
Yeah.
See what happens. I'm just not on the game with a floodlight routine. Yes, after beating Barnsley and the international break on Saturday, 17th of October, it's a home game against Reading.
Yes, don't forget the international break. And I think Neil Warnock said today, well, obviously two of our key players, George Saville and Paddy McNair, and they've got a frightening schedule actually with their international break for Northern Ireland, where they're flying all over the place and they're coming back the day before the game. And Paddy McNair has been our main defender, but also he steps forward into midfield and he's the man that's giving all the assists. So that's going to be a really tough game. Tough game from that point of view, but tough game because you just said that Reading are leading the league.
And of course, given the amount of international travel that's involved, we have to turn around even with security and say maybe possibly COVID challenges as well.
Well, yeah. Well, we've just gone into lockdown here, so it's, you know.
Despite what Andy Preston, our mayor, is saying, still never mind. Yeah. When have any Westminster government ever listened to folk in Middlesbrough? I don't know. Maybe back in the day of Miss Wilkinson. She could actually get people actually listening to us. Ellen Wilkinson. That was probably your time, Ian, the 1920s. Oh, no, maybe not. That's a different line. Rob, how can Ian Lennox get hold of a copy of Fly Me to the Moon, the fanzine, and actually say to his Newcastle supporting friends, this is the true voice of the fans?
He needs to. He can go to one of the websites, fmttm.com or fmttmborough.com, and have a look on there. I've got like a fan.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, sure. I'll do that. Yeah. I did a little bit of research on Middlesbrough this afternoon because I hadn't seen them play for, years. That's such a shame.
Did you not actually sort of pay attention to the pre-season friendly where it was Middlesbrough 5, Newcastle United 1? Did that not cross your
mind? I glossed over that one, Alex.
I just thought, you know, it might have been there.
I just wrote fluke in the margins and passed on.
Fair enough. So, Ian, what's your prediction for the score for the game Middlesbrough-Barnsley? What are you going to go for?
Well, I'm hoping better win 1-0.
1-0? I'm going to go 2-0. Rob?
I'd go for either of those, but I'll go for 2-1. Split the difference there.
There you go. Excellent. And doubtless another goal for Akpom, who will net on his gaming, etc. And great stuff from that point of view. It's marvellous. Have we actually defined where people go to get Fly Me to the Moon? Go to the website.
Yes, we have, yes.
So the final thing that we need to say then are those final words, basically. There's still stacks of stuff to get together with respect to Fly Me to the Moon. But let's see if we can get Ian to actually say, come on, Borough, and up the Borough. That's all you need to say, Ian. Come on, Borough, and up the Borough.
Come on, Borough, up the Borough.
He said it, Rob. You know, fantastic. You know, it's there. You know, I mean, I'm so shocked. Rob, would you like to just say it as well, just to kind of reinforce that after three?
Come on, Borough, and up the Borough.